Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America Podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper and Kyle Glazer, I'm John Manuel. I want to thank you for tuning in today on all of our podcasts and our Facebook Lives are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you are a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Visit baseballism.com, that's baseballism.com, and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off of your Baseballism order. So I thank Baseballism again for sponsoring the podcast.
I saw some Baseballism gear while I was out in Arizona, which was cool.
Well, that's what we have. We did not podcast last week. We've welcomed back JJ and Kyle to the fold. Both of you guys were out on assignment. It's always fun to say that. And two pretty fun assignments: spring training backfields for JJ and World Baseball Classic for Kyle. And we wanted to, you know, start with the classic, and you know, we want to look back, but we're also going to look ahead. But to look back is important, even if it's a few days, almost a week old, Kyle, just because it was so significant, and it feels like, I think for me and JJ, it's like finally the rest of you guys paid attention to what we wrote about ad nauseum in 06 and 09 and 2013. The rest of America, really, something like the baseball world anyway, paid attention to this World Baseball Classic, Kyle, with the United States having its success.
You know, I would say the baseball world paid attention. I think even the casual baseball world did, which is really so key, because you're always going to have your hardcore fans that want to pay attention. But getting the casual fan, the, you know, mom and dad who go to, you know, maybe 5-6 games a year in their local city, or, you know, they care, there's some interest, but they're not living and dying with every, you know, prospect manual or, you know, option, you know, news right. about a player being moved up or down. And I think for them to get that group of fan is so key moving forward. And they did. You know, I was saying to you guys earlier, I think the lasting effect of the 2017 WBC is the narrative that, oh, people, Americans don't care, American players, American fans don't care, that is dead. That narrative no longer is accurate. And I think we saw that with the numbers, the passion, whether you want to measure with the tangibles, merchandise sales, TV ratings, attendance, to the energy from U.S. Right. fans and U.S. players, that narrative no longer holds. And I think that's going to be the lasting impression of this. And I think that was true even if the U.S. lost in that title game to Puerto Rico. Seeing what the U.S. fans showed up and how loud they were in San Diego, seeing what it was like in the semifinal for Japan.
That semifinal U.S. game was 25,000 fans, right?
No, that was 42,003. It was a sellout in San Diego. Oh, I'm sorry. The semifinal game.
The semifinal did not sell. It was 25,000.
No, 32.
The U.S. Japan game? Sorry,
32.
Yeah.
It was the rainstorm in L.A. at 6 o'clock and on a Tuesday. That's what you got to remember. And so when people were saying, oh, Miami Drew's so much better, you got to remember, though it was a Thursday through Sunday series, the first two games in San Diego everyone was hating on, it's Tuesday, Wednesday at 6, no one goes to those games. Once you got into the Friday, Saturday, they compared very well to what right. happened in Miami. And then with the WBC in L.A., the fact you had 51,000 on a Tuesday, 30,000 plus on a 51,000 on a Wednesday, 30,000 plus on a Monday and Tuesday, you're not going to do much better than that in any city in America, well, and especially for 6 p.m. start local.
And they're going to, as much as the atmosphere in Miami was awesome, the reality of it is that this is a world event, playing it in on the West Coast. I know there were some complaints about on the West Coast about it, you know, the
time of day
for Eastern Coast, but you're trying to play it so also the time of day for Japan and all.
Right.
It's a big world.
And especially with Los Angeles having such a huge Japanese-American population, that's why Los Angeles makes the perfect sense, because you get that perfect mix.
San Fran, also where they've done before, works pretty well too.
L.A. works better.
But L.A. works better, though.
Yeah, I thought L.A. works better. I mean, like, L.A.'s hosted the finals, what, now, three times?
Yeah, and you have that mix.
The first year was San Diego.
Right.
2006 was San Diego. 2009 was LA, or is it? Or 2009.
No, you're right. 2009 was LA. 2013 was San Francisco, and now it's LA.
LA to me, LA has been the best host, and I think that's because it's got a really significant Japanese and Korean populations, and the Korean actually population is a big difference between the Southland
Very much
and the
so.
Bay Area.
Very
it's
much
a huge
so.
Differentiator. And there's just something about Dodger Stadium. I love AT&T Park or whatever it's called now. What is it now in San Francisco?
I think it's still AT&T. Okay. It went from Pac Bell to SBC to AT&T.
I've been to it when it was Pac Bell in 2000. I've been to it for the Classic in 2013. I love that ballpark.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
There's just something about Dodger Stadium. Though now it's historic. You know, now they really should call it historic Dodger Stadium. It's so old. It's what, the third oldest stadium in the big leagues?
It's 50 plus years.
I mean, it's only Fenway Park and Wrigley Field. So, like, ideally, you would love to have the World Baseball Classic sometime played in Wrigley Field. It'd be awesome to have it in Wrigley Field, or it'd be awesome to have it in Fenway Park, but not in March in Boston or Chicago. You can't do that. I mean, like, what I wonder about is, and I have the numbers in front of me, like the MLB Network had its three most viewed non-postseason games ever. So the viewership was really high there. Viewership was fantastic on the ESPN2 and the Spanish language broadcast internationally. But what I wonder is, can the Classic ever have the finals, if it's in its current incarnation of its current format, of having it in the championship being in March? So we'll just go for that conceit going forward. Could it ever happen where they have the Classic semifinals and finals in Asia? Could that ever happen, guys? Do you think that'll ever happen? Could they ever have them in Tokyo? JJ says no.
I think they'd be hesitant to. I never say never. I think it'd be great because we see the passion of what goes on in Tokyo. At the same time, this is, as much as we talk about as an international event,
right,
Major League Baseball is still a United States-based business,
yep,
where the United States does they do most of their revenue.
Right, so and MLB and the Union are the two biggest partners who run World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I don't see them being saying, okay, we're gonna ship the U.S. players out, the Puerto Rico players out, and the Dominican players out across the Pacific,
right,
for 2 days. A week before the season.
I don't see that either.
I think that would be a deal breaker.
You're going to be talking, it's going to be something where we have, Mach 6 airliners that can get you back in, a few hours or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's so far away that, I just don't think you're going to see it. And the reality of it is that as much as this event is big in Asia, you are then talking about a situation where if Japan somehow doesn't make it that time, you have less. Like we saw, I don't blame them. I think the fans in Japan did a great job at the WBC again. But when you have Israel versus the Netherlands,
right,
it's not drawing over there.
Right.
It was empty.
It was basically an exhibition game. And it was also during the middle of the day in Tokyo.
Not wisely, they played. Not they weren't dumb. They played the Japanese games at night.
Right.
At 7 p.m. local time. So I think it was overall, though, I think we can all agree, it was a huge step forward. And for me, what's important is the WBC, it keeps growing. It's on the upward trend. All these records it broke were ones that were set in 2013. So we're seeing each incarnation, it's getting bigger and better.
But one thing about that is that they should. They play with the numbers to fit what they... I'm not being wet blanket guy, but the ratings are worse than they were because they're on MLB Network. They're comparing them to MLB Network ratings.
Right.
There's a lot less coverage than when they were
ratings,
on ESPN.
Their biggest ratings were the year they were all on ESPN, which was what, 06 or was it 09? I forget which one it was. But at the same time, fewer people watch ESPN now. So those ratings that they had that year are almost like they'll never get those.
Those are encased in amber.
They are. They'll almost never get those with 40% of ESPN subscribers have unplugged, something like that. So
not 40, but a lot.
Right, it's a lot. And the other aspect of the Classic that did well beyond that was we all are plugged in social media wise on baseball, but it was trending. It was a big deal on social media during these games. And the streaming platforms were up significantly. That's where MLB is very well placed to stream games. Hey, the NCAA calls Major League Baseball Advanced Media and says, hey, can we stream our basketball tournament on your stuff again, please? It works very well. So the future medium, I think, the new media is where Major League Baseball is in very good shape. And that, I think, really helps the Classic. I know, one of the things that people in the industry hate is when you travel, when you go to hotels, and they don't have the network.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was dealing with it last week.
Having done this for MLB Network, where like I've gone in to do the AAA All-Star Game, and the local hotel where they put us up in Omaha did not have the network. They had it. They'll have it for that week when the network is in town. That's happened when I've been in the Fall League. That's happened when I've been for AAA All-Star Game. That happened. I forget where else I traveled for the network. I know it happened with the Futures Game this year in San Diego. Their hotel headquarters did not have the network when they first checked in. That's where you get over this, the reach of the network being somewhat limited. is with the social, with the digital and streaming platforms that MLB is so good at.
The thing I wanted to go back to is I agree with your point about if the U.S. had not won, it still would have been a big event. You know, like it would have been a step forward for the WBC. From a U.S. standpoint, though, this is huge because
huge.
No matter what happens in 21 or 25 now, they're no longer it's going to be a long time from now before you say again the U.S. has not stepped up. I mean, John, you've covered the breadth of international baseball for a long time now.
Yes, I have.
And I was actually because I got ended up on a plane flying back with a lot of USA baseball people, and we were talking about it. It's like, is this the biggest win in USA baseball history? I'd still say second, but
I still would just because the Olympics 2000 are just. It was, I mean, and Cuba was Cuba. That's the difference. They beat Cuba at Cuba. I mean, like beating Puerto Rico, that Puerto Rican team was great. I think it would have been different for the U.S., honestly, if they'd beaten the Dominican in the finals. That would have been a little bit different just because you look at the number of big leaguers from the Dominican. I mean, I'm not knocking Puerto Rico at all. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico earned being there. But Puerto Rico's weakness was pitching coming into the tournament, their depth of pitching. And they started Seth Lugo in the championship game.
Who actually had a great WBC.
He did, but he's still Seth Lugo. You know, like we complain about how the U.S., I wish we had Kershaw or Bumgarner for this. Puerto Rico, like, wishes they had who? Javier Vasquez? I mean, like, that's the best Puerto Rican pitcher of the last 20 years.
They got their guys.
They got their guys. That's what I'm saying. And those are their guys.
Barrios.
So for the next classic, Puerto Rico's even set up even better, with the exception of, will Yadi Molina still be Yadi Molina? I never will bet against Yadi Molina. That guy's incredible. But I'm just saying, like, so Puerto Rico, very young team and very iffy pitching. Like, the Dominican and Japan, in my mind, even Venezuela, more complete rosters up and down for me.
That's fair.
And so if the United States had gone and beaten either the Dominican or Japan, which had won the first three classics.
And the U.S. can say, we did. We just did it earlier.
Right. But in the finals, I mean, but you're right. But beating Cuba for gold, there's something special about that, beating Cuba for gold when Cuba was Cuba.
Regardless, you know, I think, obviously, yeah, that's a very valid debate, you know, one or two. Yeah. We're still talking about one of the greatest.
And that's it.
And that's huge. This was a wonderful moment in USA baseball history.
Of the ones that people pay attention to. Again, that's the problem, is that the U.S. has beaten Cuba other times that people didn't pay attention to. For me, like 2006 Olympic qualifier, going to Havana, and Kevin Sloy pitched the first five innings of that game, I believe, and Michael Bourne had the game-winning hit. No one knows about that team. I mean, I wrote the hell out of that summer, that fall when it happened, but no one remembers that. But that was, within the halls of USA baseball, that was like, we qualified for the Olympics and we beat the Cubans in Havana, and they were still kind of
people,
the Cubans.
Because there's people who don't remember, like, qualifying for the Olympics was important because it had failed to do the previous Olympics.
Exactly.
And that's where I think some of it also is the difference between being on a championship stage where you're on a national television network, even when MLB network is not everywhere as it is, you know, as you'd like it to be.
And that's the thing. Many more people paid attention to this than they paid attention to Ben Sheets in 2000, that's for sure. So I touched on... kind of the future of the classic format. Now, having covered one, Kyle, like just been in the thick of it, was there any sense around it? Like, oh, this is what it's going to be forever? I mean, do you think there's going to be, like, because Buster Olney wrote, I thought it was one of the most hot takey Buster Olney columns I've ever written. I don't think of Buster in hot takes. And I really respect Buster significantly, but he wrote, like, they should either go all in or get rid of the classic. And I think his all in meant, like, having. Splitting it up so you get the semifinals and finals during the All-Star break. And he talked about having it every year. I don't know if you read Buster's piece, but
I missed it. I mean,
you should go back and read it for sure.
Here's the thing. It's kept growing in its current format. They're not going to tear it all up and try and do something way different. It'd be one thing if everything this year had been stagnant or lower than years past. But when you have increases across the board, every metric you care about, you're not then going to do something wild and crazy. I really do strongly believe we will see the classic, as we saw in 2017, exactly the same way as we see it in 2021. With the, you know, you could say maybe with the fact the Olympics are there, maybe some of the player, selection will be a little different. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But I think that's the limit of it. We're not going to see different times. We're not going to see different dates. We're not going to see different formatting. I think we're going to see it as is until it starts plateauing. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to ruin mess with something that's growing. It's just a basic business principle.
Well, the thing with this is also is they checked off the box again. When they founded the WBC, one of the big ideas was grow the game internationally. I don't know what Israel is going to do, the Israeli Baseball Federation is going to do with the big check that will arrive for how well Team Israel did. But I can tell you this, there's going to be more baseball fields in Israel in 2021 than there is
and,
now.
And the Netherlands making it to the Netherlands, second time.
So the Netherlands, if the Netherlands keeps this up, at some point all of honkball will be playing in top-notch stadiums. Because
what you wonder about is, you know, having talked to the Dutch, you know, they're building this stadium in Amsterdam. It might already be done.
It's built.
The intention when they built it was to bring an a major league team, not permanently to the Netherlands, but for an exhibition game. That apparently is not going to happen. It's going to go to London. The MLB has shifted, like, we're going to go to London for a major league series. If we're going to have an opening series in Chihuahua, Mexico, or we can have one in Sydney, Australia, they could do that elsewhere. And if they would, but and so the idea was going to Europe and going to the Netherlands.
Who they built their stadium anymore. Literally with the idea, like, they spent extra to have things for major league caliber
lighting, major league caliber infield. And according to the Dutch, it's not going to happen. They fully expect the a major league season opening series to go to London. Of course, the problem is London in March.
Yeah, it's going to be cold. Or early April, and right. Do they have the baseball facilities?
I mean, they have the pitch. They have all these soccer pitches that are done.
Basically,
I'm not an EPL expert.
But I'll go back to that. This is what they proved last year with the Fort Benning game, which is
Fort Bragg.
I'm from Georgia. Fort Bragg. The Fort Bragg game, which was give us 6 months head start and we can play pretty much wherever you want to play. And that's really what it comes down to. If you give us an area, we can build you a temporary stadium, because that literally, they started with nothing. They ended up with a major league caliber stadium. And then when the game was over, they ended up with, okay, now we take apart our major league caliber stadium. That's what they can do.
The crazy thing to me is this Wikipedia page that says the largest covered stadium in England is in Cardiff, Wales, Millennium Stadium. Hmm. And all the rest of the dome stadiums on here are not in the United States or Germany. So England doesn't seem like it has too many available domes.
You play soccer in snow some. So.
Or the rain or whatever,
but
I guess.
But I do think, going back to the point we're talking about growing the international game, it succeeded. It's succeeding. It has succeeded. And by all accounts, it's going to continue to succeed because the format is working. And that's where I think sometimes, you know, talking to other people around, the only people that were pitching this, oh, well, what if we did this, were other writers. It wasn't the actual decision, it wasn't the commissioner, it wasn't the players union folks, talking to the players, the management, the people who actually are in charge of making this decision. Everyone's like, no, I love this. This was incredible. This was perfect.
To me, the best argument for keeping it the way it is that it's way better than spring training. That's the best argument for me. Is that it's much more entertaining baseball in March, and it does grab more attention and more eyeballs to baseball in March than baseball would otherwise.
No question.
I miss it.
I literally this week miss it that it's not around anymore.
There's no question. I miss it too. And as a college basketball fan whose voice is hoarse from college basketball, one of the hard things to acknowledge about being a college basketball fan is that college basketball is diminished in the culture. It only matters at the tournament time. And the rest of the, like, so March is kind of when it matters, but all those games are on the weekend, and the Classic fills those gaps.
And there's nothing else going on in March. The only people talking about this were other writers. Like, well, why do you want to compete head to head with March Madness? You're not. There are certain nights you are, but for the most part, you're not. And I think that that's where Major League Baseball has done something nice here, where you're pre-NFL draft. NBA and NHL, the seasons are pretty much decided, and they don't compete with Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is on a level on its own
compared
to those two.
The NBA talk this month is either ridiculous MVP discussion of a sport where really nobody remembers.
Or the resting player controversy.
And that's it. And it's all negative. It's resting players in this kind of thing. It's there's no positive storylines, and they've tried to gin up rivalries in the NBA and all this kind of stuff.
The NBA is a sport that basically is just this really long exhibition season to get you to the games that matter.
Well, the thing is, though, that those exhibitions are incredibly fun to watch. Yeah, the NBA's product is at an extremely high level. I'm not knocking the NBA. I'm just saying it doesn't own March, where the Classic has found a niche. I think that March is a good time of year. I still think you could do the Classic and whittle it down to four and then take the four to the All-Star break. And that would make a good tournament better. So for me, doing those first two rounds a little bit later in spring, and also the travel for the Pacific, for the Asian nations, maybe be a little bit.
They wouldn't need it.
They wouldn't need it. That's what I'm saying. It would be a little bit. It would even
They would stay in Asia.
The logistical problem is that every 4 years, Japan and the KBO, the NPB and the KBO would have to sync up their All-Star breaks basically with the United States one.
Technically the CPBL, which right now can even get like all of their teams to agree about whether they're allowing their players to participate.
Worried about Taiwan. Yeah. I'm really not worried about Taiwan. When you don't have to qualify for back-to-back classics, come talk to me.
But again, I do think that all this discussion we're having, it's at the fan, writer, pundit level. It's not the level where decisions are actually being made.
Based on what they were talking about. But what I'm saying though is that
after this, before this, it was. But after the success,
I don't think that changes it much. I really don't. Like they're looking at this every time as what is the best event we can do, and they have at least talked about before this event ever happened this time.
Right?
Would this be better? Doing what you just talked about.
I just think you strike while the iron is hot. You don't wait for it to go down. I'm no economist, but don't they always talk about growth? I mean, like, when you have 2% growth in your economy, aren't you trying to get to 3%? If your profits are growing by 10%, aren't you trying to get to 15%? So they grew the Classic now by, X percent.
20, 25, 30, depending on your metric.
Don't they get greedy? Isn't that what capitalists do? But you get greedy and you go, 25%, screw that, I don't want 40.
I don't know if it's even greedy. I do think that they have to really look at this and say, could we have a better event?
Yeah.
Can we have a better event if this is part of All-Star Week every 4 years?
That's what, to me,
and they have to, again, it may not be. They may decide no. They may find, because there's so many logistical things that have to happen.
But that totally opens up the whole thing of, we want World Baseball Classic in Boston in July. You can do that. You can do World Baseball Classic in Chicago in July. You can do it anywhere. In July in the United States, you can do it anywhere.
But the
concern you go to Seattle.
The concern is you have these great semifinal games. Then you shut it off for three and a half months. You're going to lose. I'm at the first round, second round. You know, you've got all this momentum going, and then you just shut it down. And 4 months, I think 4 months now, people are going to care less. They're going to say, that thing 4 months ago.
But at the same time, if you want to talk about when they talk about what players can we get, if you said the gets for the first and second round are going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
But if you talk about, again, insurance is an issue here, but if you talk about, if you said, like, we saw Kenley Jansen basically said, hey, now that you're here, I'm in.
Right.
Said during the game.
Basically, I just love that he picked up the bullpen photo and said, pretty, pretty please. And Andrew Freeman was like, no. How do you say no in Dutch? No.
But at the same time, you look at it and you say, if you are saying the entire ask is, I want you, like, as a starting pitcher, I want you to make a start during this 1 week where you're going to throw, you know, where you're completely stretched
out.
And
if a dude at that point says, I was going fishing that week, you're like, well, yeah, we don't want you anyway. You know, because that's the difference. And that is the difference. Both Israel and Team USA, I haven't talked to the Israeli team a little bit about this. It seemed like their focus was, and what all the teams have figured out is, who wants to be here?
Right.
Okay, then we're going to take the best of those of you who want to be here.
Right.
And that's the best approach, it feels like. And I just thought that the U.S. was supposed to kind of be down on its pitching because they didn't get their best pitchers. The United States pitching was incredible in this whole class.
2.25 ERA.
It was dominant at times. Whether it wasn't just Stroman.
No, Duffy. Smiley was amazing, his one start.
Yeah, and Chris Archer was fantastic. Yeah. I still wish that he'd taken it to
Puerto Rico. Jose Berrios essentially didn't make the Twins opening day roster in part because he went to the WBC, and his answer was, absolutely entirely worth it.
Yeah.
And he didn't even say, like, I like dinosaur barbecue in Rochester. Send me back.
You know? So here's the question. Since I think we're different. Let's put this on the bet board and mark it down for Fortuna. I believe strongly that the 2021 WBC will be played exactly the same format as it is now. Agree or disagree?
I disagree. I believe that they will try to strike while the iron is hot to grow their product and to expand it. And the only the only thing that would stand in their way, I think they're going to want to do that, and what will stand in their way is their sponsors. Does MasterCard or is it MasterCard?
But what like, will be will the finals of the 2020 WBC?
I think they'll be the finals and the semifinals will be played during All Star Week.
JJ?
I'll split the middle, which is that they will try to do that, but logistically it'll prove to be impossible to do it for 2021 because, as you said, you have to get the crazy part about that is it is not a problem for the U.S. to say we are designing our schedule for that week.
Yeah.
The worst part is Japan's always made it that far. But how crazy is it if the MPB has to shut down their schedule for a week? And let's say Japan doesn't make it.
Right.
Because the problem logistically you have is...
They pretty much rigged it this year that they would have been impossible for them not to make it this year. Seriously.
But it is the... how about or Korea? We have to arrange your schedule. And it's like, by the way, you're just not playing for this week.
Here's a giant pile of money. Don't play this week.
You're not going to play this week. But you're not going to... And you're not doing anything. That is the problem.
That's tough.
The biggest logistical problem is that if you play it in March... And then you go to the All-Star, is that the U.S. knows that between the Dominican team and the Puerto Rican team and the U.S. team, there's enough different teams that there will be a significant amount. It's just impossible for it not to be. If you're Korea and you shut down your league for a week and you're not there, that is doubly bad. You're shutting down your league. And it also reminds you, by the way, we're not playing this week of our really disappointing team that really just...
This is true. The two other things that we'll leave the Classic. Where would you like to see the Classic expand by 2021 in terms of playing? Do you think they should... this year, the pools were Mexico, United States, Japan, Korea for the first round for pool play. I would love to see 2021 be in Cuba. I don't know if that's possible. Things have opened up a little bit. Obviously, the politics have changed. I would imagine. I mean, what if they played in Trump Stadium in Havana in 2021? I mean, crazier things have happened. I would also love to see that happen. There've been a World Baseball Classic qualifier in Germany. There has not been a WBC round in Europe. 2021 is another opportunity to grow it and have one in Europe, maybe somewhere else in Latin America.
You know, it's funny. I sort of, one night, was playing with this on my phone. They've already been in San Juan before. I think they should go back and have a first round in San Juan. I would redo the pools a little bit.
Puerto Rico certainly earned the right, if they want to host again, to capitalize on the popularity.
Put them at Harem Bithorn. And then I do think, you know, depending on where that Netherlands stadium is in 4 years, assuming
it's already it's
there and it's maintained and it's been used. I think it'd be really good to have it. Is it Amsterdam, Rotterdam? Where is it?
It's
in Amsterdam.
It's in Amsterdam. I mean, I think if you put, you know, the Netherlands, Italy, Israel, and pick one other, you know, nation in there, you could actually do something interesting. You go to San Juan, you make that Puerto Rico, the Dominican, Venezuela, make it a very Hispanic-oriented pool. I think it would be an incredible atmosphere. You know, you put U.S. and Mexico and San Diego to start. At the first round, that'd be great. I would kind of have San Diego as a first round site, you know, with San Juan, Tokyo, Amsterdam. Make Miami a second round site where you can get the best of that U.S., you know, with the Dominican, Puerto Rico pool, and leave the other second round site. Maybe it's Tokyo. Maybe you put it in Amsterdam.
You're always going to be in Tokyo at some point to me because
it's too successful. They're not going to pull it.
They have to make money. And TV wise, you have to have those games played.
You got to have some games that are played in the prime time in Asia. That's important.
The problem, I like your plan. The problem with that, I do see, is if you told me if I have to play in the Netherlands and then I'm picking up and I'm flying to Japan, the jet lag, and then if I succeed there, I have to fly to the States.
That's a 9-hour time zone difference.
And that's where I can see how having a Seoul pool and a Tokyo pool works because they're in that same general vicinity.
Right. The one concern is like I do think you're going to have more trouble. If I'm a major league team and I look at my players who are playing for the Dutch team and I say, wait a second, they're going to be here and then here and then here, I would worry from an injury standpoint, just the lack of true good rest.
And that's fair. But I do think if you have San Juan as one of your first round sites, that would do very well.
I agree. I would ask the question of, at some point, shouldn't we see as one of these in the Dominican Republic?
That makes too much sense. You're right. We really should.
I mean, this is what Ben tweeted out, and different, but when should we? We've had major league games in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, why can't we have them in the DR?
Why can't we have a three-game series? If we're talking about having a three-game series in London, at some point, and that's not even about, let's be honest, it's not about growing the game at that point. The Dominican Republic, they're pretty bought in on the game,
it's rewarding
yes. A country that deserves to, like, look, we, could you imagine, like, the teams, like, whoever teams get to go there, players, there are going to be many players from other teams, like, why are we not going to get, you know, it is something where...
I remember, you know, when the Angels and Expos played in San Juan in 04, and I don't remember how well
it's
those
because
series
the Expos,
did.
It's because the Expos had nowhere to go.
Yes. I just remember, like, some regular season games there, and I feel like
they played,
what,
18
cool.
that year? Or 20? I mean, it was, that was part of their schedule.
Expos played, I think it was 59 games in Montreal that year.
The traveling Expos.
So they really, I mean, it was pitiful. I would love to see the first round spread out. And the other thing that makes me want to spread it out was that there were these problems in Mexico. The on-site people in Mexico, they had the problems of security issues. Yadier and Molina and the Puerto Rican players talked about with their families. It doesn't sound like it was a run like a major league event. And that's where part of the profits of this seem like they have to go next time is toward making the players feel like it's major league in every way. And let's face it, the major league standard is very high.
Yes.
And that's going to be expensive. But if you want to keep having the players have that buy-in, you know, you can't have players with sour grapes like the Mexican
fans. But the thing about this is I think a lot of that also came back to the other thing, the lesson from this one is make your tiebreaker rules very clear.
That was pitiful.
And that is...
That was really pitiful that got sideways like that.
But that is this is now a $100 million plus event.
So you better.
So you have money. There is money to be spent when it is a $100 million event. And the one other question before we move on that I'll ask you guys is, it's every 4 years. Is that good? It used to be three.
No, it was only three that one time.
That one time. But it was,
I think so.
I mean, same as the World Cup, same as the Olympics. I think it's a good number.
I love every other year. I would love every 2 years. You know, I'm greedy, but I think every 2 years would make sense for me. And not now. Like, I don't think you could get it ready for 2019.
Right.
But if you went 2021, 2023, 2025, I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, I love every other year.
The one thing I'll say about it is if baseball is going to be in the Olympics, I know it's not going to be an inferior event. It'll always be. And much to the IOC's dismay, Olympic baseball will always be an inferior event to the WBC. But that makes it, even though it's going to be really backloaded, because the way the schedule goes right now, if it stays in the Olympics, it'll be like no international baseball of a premier event, no inter-premier event, and then boom, we have it back-to-back years. But that makes it a little easier for me. Like if we have Olympics and WBC,
gotcha.
You know, to me, because the Olympics is... It's the U.S. Like, Japan treats that very much.
I'm very curious about this future of the Olympics as a genre. I mean, you know, that involves politics, too, as we go into this different age that we're in. But, I mean, like, how much international cooperation is there going to be for an Olympics? And who wants to host this?
The hosting's the issue, but there's too much money issue. There. There's too much money there that'll ever go away.
We'll see.
It's literally billion-dollar television contract.
Obviously, no question. But I mean, if people stop caring, I'm just curious what happens. If people, again, if there's a television bubble for Major League Baseball or for other stuff, how big is that bubble for all these corrupt international aristocrats who run the Olympics? I mean, it's pretty bad. So I don't even want to go on the Olympics thing. It's just 2020. I'm happy they're going to have it in Tokyo. After that, if you're having 2024 Olympics, like in Constantinople,
LA or Paris, those are the contenders.
I thought Istanbul was the finalist.
Oh, is it?
I couldn't remember, but
Constantinople. You're going back to the Byzantine Empire here.
You're damn right I am. So it's the Baseball America podcast with JJ, Kyle, and John. JJ went to go see some. I could probably leave this podcast now and let you guys talk Padres prospects, but I do think Arizona would be a great future home for a World Baseball Classic.
It was at Chase Field.
Right. I've been there.
And domes are good. I think domes are good for this. I think Seattle would be great for this also.
Well,
because it's Pacific and domed. I think it would be perfect.
But the other thing they did in Arizona, do you remember, they played games at WBC at Salt River Field, which is the most Major League Baseball caliber non-Major League stadium.
In the world.
But they also had Chase Field sitting here, and so there was... which never happens in Arizona. They had rain in the forecast. They went, there's rain in the forecast. We're moving to Chase Field. So we only played, there was supposed to be more at Salt River Fields, but there was only a little bit at Salt River Fields. But you do
Salt
have that.
Salt River Fields forever.
I mean, that is, because that ballpark is insane.
It was stunning. It didn't get built until after I graduated from ASU, so I didn't get to see it when I was there. And then when I went back this past fall, like for the first time,
ridiculous.
Dear God.
Yeah, that place, all it's missing is a second deck.
I mean, it really is. Awesome. Yeah, it's, but at the same time, I do think there's something an advantage of not having, because there's
already so much baseball in March in Arizona.
That's
the difference with Miami. South Florida, West Palm Beach, but Broward and Dade, especially Dade is the most international, the most ethnic of those three counties down there. I know I'm going back 30 years to my Boca days, but It's a haul. I had to take, when I took the train to go see the Miami Heat their first year, what was it called? I can't remember what the train was called. But that train ride was long from West Palm Beach to Miami.
Oh, yeah.
So getting down,
it's a good hour and a half drive.
And Marlins Park, I think with traffic, in Florida traffic, if there's no traffic, people fly down there. That's why I drive, the way I drive. I learned to drive in Florida. But it's an hour, so with no traffic. But it is distinct. There's no Fort Lauderdale or Miami spring training teams. Right. So you aren't competing with spring training when you're in Miami, and you are when you're in Phoenix. That was a long way of getting to that.
Yeah. So. But no, in Phoenix, you don't – really what I would say is you don't need it there from that standpoint of okay, so I can go to the WBC or I can go to one of these other 8 to 10 options
I have. The thing with Seattle – and where you could say it would get tricky, if you will, is I think if you have it in Seattle, you have to have Japan there. But you don't want to leave Tokyo. So it's sort of tricky. I think if you're going to do it in Seattle, you have to have Canada, you have to have Japan.
Yeah. I was saying, you could even do a second round where the U.S. isn't even there and have it in Seattle. Yeah,
but again, I think you have to have one of Japan or the U.S.
And,
otherwise, it's going to flop.
And the other problem is...
I think you have a Canada and Japan, you're guaranteed.
I agree. But, if Japan's there, you're fine. But they have to be
Canada
there.
Has to qualify now, though.
Yeah, and the other part of that is that while you have a dome, the weather there in that time, I mean, I just ran into a lot of Northwest scouts, and they're like, it has just rained every single day. And that's just like, that's Seattle.
It was miserable. We'll talk about it on our college podcast, but it was miserable this weekend in Corvallis for Mike Lanana. And he wore, you can go on his Twitter feed, @MLanana, and see all the video that he shot. And he was talking about it / complaining about it last night on our top 25 call about sitting out in the rain and shooting all his vines. But you usually don't worry about that in Arizona for sure. So here's the real question, JJ. Who was the funnest prospect you saw? Not the best. Who was the funnest prospect you saw on the backfields?
The thing that I will step away, and we'll have video on this up today, should be today. The one I'll step away remembering the most is Adrian Morjon, the Padres lefty who should
play in the 2021 Classic for Cuba if they're able to use expats, which hopefully they will.
And it was just a couple of innings, but it was an eye-opening couple of innings. Kyle, you wrote him up for the handbook, and when I showed you the video today, and you said like it was two innings, but he's already taken a little step because velocity-wise. For those two innings, he was legit. When I say sitting 94,
every single pitch was 94.
It was like I saw the entire time I saw him in his two innings. I believe he threw, not every pitch is on the video, but he threw 193 and he threw a couple of 95s. That was it. Like it was literally 94, 94, 94, and he was locating 94 with intent.
And compared to Instructs, when doing all my scout calls, it was 91 to 93 sit, touch 96. So, he'd get a few 94s, but for him to sit 94, just those 6 months of being in a team facility, getting on those training programs, making the mechanical adjustments, that's a huge jump. And it's been impressive to see just what he's grown in 6 months. It's really impressive.
And we're talking about an 18-year-old.
Just turned 18, February.
Just turned 18. I had a Padres official ask me the interesting question, which you hear this a lot when you have a guy like 18-year-old international player or something. It's like, okay, let's say that he plops into the 2017 draft. Where does he go? And the reality of it is you say, okay, 18-year-old lefty with if you're very conservative, a 60 fastball, but you could easily say a 70 fastball with multiple scouts gave me a 70 on the changeup. Breaking ball is much more iffy right now, you know, but he also has some control and command. He has an idea of what he's doing with it.
Mechanics are clean.
Mechanics are clean, all that. And you say, no, it's always easy to say, it's easy to say he's a top, but he's an easy top 10 pick.
Well, when I was making my calls about him, even before this, just other international scouts outside the Padres mm-hmm. work, they all said, no, he's on par with a top 10 pick in any draft. And I even wrote that in the book. But I would argue that, you know, top 10, I mean, now that's top 5.
Right.
That's even
Brendan
higher.
Brendan McKay is if you said top lefty pitcher, who's also, he's a hitter.
Right.
But Brendan McKay probably right now is the top lefty pitcher in this draft class. Brendan McKay's curve, his breaking ball is at a different, is much better than Morejon's at this point. He's 3 years older also, but it's much better. Same time, fastball-wise, Morejon is, again, even if you say that he was sitting a little higher because it was a two-inning stint, the fastball definitely has significantly more velocity than McKay. The changeup,
I don't know about significantly more, but it's more. I mean, when McKay at his best is 992, what you're hoping is that he just pitches and throws bullpens, he throws harder than that. So
right, but McKay very rarely, you're rarely seeing
94s.
Yeah,
he does pop 94.
Whereas Morejon spring has been sitting 94.
Right. No. It's more velocity. It's a grade better.
So, no, I think we're in agreement. I mean, this is a guy who has a chance to be really special. I mean, talking about all the international guys the Padres signed, and as you guys know, when you talk about international prospects, there's a very wide range of opinions on those guys because they're so young, because there's so much projection left, even more than domestic high schoolers. And Morejon, it was unanimous. I couldn't find anyone who was like, eh. They were like, no, he's really good. It's just a matter of, is he Max Fried really good or Julio Urias very good? There's obviously a degree there, but they're both really good.
Well, the other thing that stands out is you want to see these guys. When you sign a guy, you want it. There's some, to me, one of the things that does stand out, like Lucas Ursig having a great spring on top of the great first stint he had in pro ball last year. I was having this conversation in Arizona with a couple of, with a pro scouting director and a couple of pro scouts at different times. It's like, it is amazing how much you do know. Like, that first, by the end of spring training for a guy who signed out of the draft last year or a July 2 guy, you know something. You don't know as much as you want to know. But like with a draft guy, like Lucas Ursig, we can confidently now say with Lucas Ursig, you can't say he's an absolute slam dunk guy or anything like that. This guy, he was a second-round pick who hit 302?
305.
305 last year in a league where hitting 305 does not...
NAIA. That's what I need to say.
Yeah. But at the same time, the Brewers know a lot more about Lucas Ursig now than they did when they drafted him. And everything, all indications are...
It's a good what they know.
It's very good.
Yeah, exactly. The more they know, it's really been very good.
You take these Padres... July 2 guys, the international guys they signed. They knew after instructs, we've got to have two AZL teams because we've got too many guys who are ready. Again, that's a significant step. To have all these guys who you're saying, we're bringing them over to the States, they're not going to play in the DSL their first year. That's significant right there. But then to come out in spring training, they've seen that Almanzar can play at the high A level against high A guys and hasn't been overmatched. At one point, he was 7-for-11 in a stretch, playing against guys who legitimately are 3 years older than him, most of them. When they can see that Gabriel Arias is playing and holding his own very well, looks very much at the level when he's playing against low-A guys. And when I say low-A guys, I'm talking about he's faced Juan Hillman and Brady Aiken.
Right,
guys.
But the tools are the tools. But where you can't get carried away, in my opinion, do it over 100 games.
No, good.
So you're getting a little carried away with...
What I'm saying, though, is that...
Holding your own for a week is not the same
absolutely.
As holding your own for 100 games. The grind is the grind.
Absolutely.
That's what separates all these guys, and that's why it's exciting, but it's a little, you got to temper your enthusiasm a little bit. Or let's see dudes do it for 100 games. But the hard is what makes it good. Let's see them do the hard part.
But at the same time, and these guys aren't going to get to do that this year because none of these guys are going to low A or anything like that. But at the same time, when you see those guys, they knew the reason they got signed was the tools. The skills are further advanced than anyone expected. Then you see a guy like Jordy Barley, another one of their July 2 guys. And when they signed him, the question was, okay, you know he can run. He's quick twitch. He's got a really good arm. He's an infielder. But now, in just the span of essentially now the 7-8 months since he signed, he's showing pop. He's showing power. He didn't. There was thought that he had some of that, but again, what you are talking about, that you're right. You can't go too crazy. They're ninth in our top in our talent
ranking. I said the same thing for Ursaeg, though, too. I'm just saying, like, anybody having a great spring, you do know more. I'm excited to know more about all these guys, but I don't make the leap that you're making on we know that he's ready to go. I'm fine to be a little late on guys. Because I do want more information. I do want more data, and I want to see a guy do it
I think for a full season. I think for me, you know, just keeping track on what's happening, I think some of it's a case by case. Like, it is notable to me that, okay, Morejon was sitting 91, 93. He's now sitting 94. Clearly, there's a leap there that's been a progress that you want to see.
He's further away from being abused as a 15-year-old by the Cuban national team, which is true.
You know, and the other one that really interested me just a little bit was, you know, Gabriel Arias. So when he signed, it was, this guy's a great defender. We love the glove. We love, you know, all the actions. That's what he's best at. You know, the bat, we'll see. And then already in 6 months of development, you've seen the progress. And, you know, just watching the video of his swing, it's like, that doesn't look like the swing of a, you know, toolsy, no-hit middle infielder. That's a real live swing. And so it's just a matter of, this does not mean Gabriel Arias is all of a sudden a 65-grade player who's going to be a superstar, but it means, okay, there's... the progress you want to see made has been made in a relatively short time. I would say it's encouraging, and it makes my eyebrows go.
And that's where I'm, they're glimpses, but what I would say is the Padres trend line of where I expect them to go. I knew they spent so much money internationally, they should be really good at the lower levels. I will say this, when you talk to scouts for other teams mm-hmm. who have seen them this spring, saw him in instructs last year and seen him again this spring, and they say, this is rare. We don't, like, these are guys who see, you know, this level guy, and right. they're like, these guys are better than usually what I see these guys at this point.
I'll just say that the last time I remember somebody saying that was about, it was a scout that we all know who was extremely respected, who said the same thing about the Phillies at instructs and in spring training, and it was all a lot of guys who didn't work out. It was Brody Colvin. It was Juwan James. It was that crew mm-hmm. of Phillies, and they're just so far away. And those guys were advanced with their tools, and some of them were advanced with their skills. So I'm encouraged by the Padres. I think that's the right word. And they sound like they are more robust and more skilled than even they thought, which is really awesome.
But they're all 18-year-olds going 16, to extend. 16, 17, and some 18.
So right. I think they can't get carried away.
And even their pitchers. Their pitchers, like you see pitcher after pitcher, we've got open-day rosters issues coming out. I'm not expecting to see most of those guys. The plan for most of those pitchers is check back in May. It's very probable that we're not going to see Mason Thompson or Cal Quantrill or Reggie Lawson.
Cal Quantrill not in full season ball?
There is a very high likelihood, because none of those guys are going to be able to throw 150 innings this year. They're not coming off of what they did. None of them are. And so their plan, from what my conversations and all, is more of...
why would you handle Cal Quantrill the same way you handle what they did?
They're not going to send him the same level when he's done, but they're
I didn't say that. So handle him the same way.
Quantrill, because Jacob Nix last year was at Fort Wayne for a full season, but he threw 105. They were able to really keep it to, you know, mm-hmm. five inning stints. I think that's what we're seeing more like with Quantrill. But I agree that Thompson, Lawson, Morejon, these guys are going to be an extended, and maybe then, short season, maybe
Oh, we're going to see some of those in Fort Wayne, right? But they're not going to show up in Fort Wayne
starting.
Till May.
They're not. I would say a lot of those guys. I don't think we're going to see them until June or July.
But a conversation with Mark Pryor, their pitching coordinator, also said, and this will be up this week too. I got a lot of stuff I got to write. he said one thing that I'm very strong about is you need to challenge guys. And it's funny, I kept hearing this from different teams. Like, there was a lot of talk of, you know what, push a guy and see where he can handle level. And especially with pitchers. That's one of the things that's interesting to me with Cal Quantrill. Just from a standpoint of where do you send that guy?
Yeah.
You send Cal Quantrill to high A even, and Cal Quantrill's changeup, unless you basically, or his changeups, I should say.
Well, he did get hammered in low A.
Right.
Hammered.
I know.
It's a small, sample.
It was like three starts?
Something, but it was all like 20 hits.
But
12 hits and 4 2/3 innings.
But what I'm saying is with a guy like that, his changeup should allow him to basically, it's almost going to be, it could be detrimental to him at the A level, where if he's not very particular about it. Because what Cal Quantrill needs to do is get innings. Everyone needs to improve
fastball command.
But more than anything, he's got a slider and a curveball. Is either one of them going to develop into
And we saw the flashes of the slider getting to above average toward the end of last year.
But he's got to develop. He's right now not consistent.
The consistency is not there. And that's where we'll. But I think.
But I'm saying, like, that's to me.
He'll be in Fort Wayne, maybe. Someone told me that they're considering pushing him to Elsinore. All my conversations during the offseason were, we're going to start him in Fort Wayne. Now, if he showed up in spring training,
I think
Elsinore really
makes sense from a weather standpoint more than anything else. Not from a level, but just in the weather. He's older.
So right, and that was the talk, because, you know, we're planning as of the phone calls in November, Fort Wayne, if he shows up in spring training and does really well, Elsinore's a possibility. But at the end of the day, I think we all agree that the Padres have a lot of really low-level talented prospects. It's cool to see them. And now it's a matter of, okay, now let's develop them, because, you know, part of the reason we have them ninth in the org talent rankings, and part of the reason, you know, hey, Michael Geddes is ranked ahead of all these guys, because guess what? Michael Geddes, who's only a year older than some of them, you know, 19 turned 20 last year, just raked in high A, which is a whole different ballgame than looking really good in instruct slash extended.
Again, a lot of these guys we're talking about have yet to play. The July 2 guys, none of them have played their first official game yet.
Right.
And so there is something where they're all ticketed to extended. I wouldn't be shocked if you ended up seeing Almanzar play up above the AZL before the year's over, because he's looked that good. But that is something where you are talking, these guys are a long ways away. That said, it was something where if you said to me, what are the conversations of scouts from other teams that they bring up with you when you're out there, one of the things that stands out is everyone's like, in Arizona, one of the stories of Springs is, wow, in the backfields, these really young arms and position players especially are standing out in a way that we didn't expect to see.
That's a good way. I mean, I don't know if we could sum it up. We've got a lot. We've been talking for 52 minutes, so we might want to wrap up the podcast. I did want to ask, like, just, you know, you guys could probably talk Padres the whole time, but I am very intrigued by just the idea of, you know, the backfields and just how much fun backfields are. And you know, there's so much about the commercialism of spring training that turns me off when you go, like the big league games, how much they cost, that kind of stuff. But if you're listening to this podcast, you're already interested in baseball the way we do it. I mean, if you haven't been to a spring training backfields game, I mean, what are you waiting for? That's the way to go see spring training for me.
It's so good in so many ways. Really, the best ways our schedule is to go to games on days that the big league club's not there at the same time. I managed to actually work that out, that somehow I never saw a big league spring training game while I was in Arizona for 8 days, and I never ended up at a ballpark that was hosting a big league game at the time that I was doing the backfields, which worked out really well. But it's, okay, start off, it's free. So when you talk about commercialism, there is no, now the only thing that pays, like if you go to like Padres Mariners camp, they have concession stands.
Right.
Like, do understand, this is a, you are going to go back to the roots of baseball. Don't expect to get your program. Don't expect to know who the players are, maybe, because Only half the teams put names on the back of their unis.
And all the announcements are made by a man in a hat who's got like one of those cheerleaders.
I do think part of the complication is, you know, those games, it's not broadcasted who's playing where, when, and what time to the general public a lot of times.
It is available, though, now. Like, spring training schedules are, like, you can actually get them online for the minor league side. Like,
a lot of them tweeted out. All of them, but a lot of teams do tweet it out.
Follow Brewers PD.
Yes, that's
that is the best player development Twitter, and it's not the gap between them and second best. There's an infinite gap. I mean, because they tweet out, here's our lineups for today. Here's who's pitching tomorrow. If you want to plan ahead, all that. But again, the other thing about it is usually you are seeing two, sometimes three games going on at the same time. There is no downtime. The real problem you often have is there's too much good stuff going on. There was the one that struck me, we talked about Morejon, is everyone's watching Morejon and Mason Thompson, who's an outstanding pitching prospect, a guy you want to watch, is pitching on the other field, and he's pitching to no scouts, you know, like he's got his fan, you know, the players are there and all that have to chart and all that. But all the scouts, all the Padres front office side is overwatching, you know, Morejon pitch. Mason Thompson's pitch is like, in any other situation, everyone would be here for Morejon. Or like another day, you're sitting there, it's like, okay, this is Walker Buehler versus Luis Castillo. I'm going to see 99 pretty regularly. And then over here on another field, you're having other guys who are worth watching. The thing on the backfields is there's more going on than you can watch, which is a pretty fun experience to have.
A little overwhelming sometimes.
Oh, it addles my brain at times because it's like I always feel like if there's four games going on, which does happen at times, I know I'm missing something. And it's like, well, you got to focus on what you're seeing, not what I'm missing, but I focus on what I'm missing. It's like I'll give an old Aaron Fit reference. It was like basically you've ordered your meal and you always have the, you know, the, oh, that should have ordered that.
Know, buyer's remorse. You know. Absolutely. Yeah, you do have that a lot in spring training on the backfields.
Oh, even choosing where you're going to go that day. And it's like the last day. And that was the one day where I was completely free. Like it was like my writing is done. It's just let me pick a good matchup to go to. And I'm talking with Bill Mitchell, our photographer, who is the dean of Arizona, who knows everyone. You know, it basically, so where are you going, Bill? And he was going to Dodgers Reds because he wanted to see Vladimir Gutierrez, and there was a couple of Dodgers, but I think Jordan Sheffield was pitching that day too. Pretty good matchup.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to Dodgers Reds, but I'm going to go see Walker Buehler versus Luis Castillo. And I'm going, you know, so he was going to Camelback, and I was going to Goodyear. And even just then, of which Dodgers-Reds game do you want to go to was a really – but I got to see Senzel also and all that. So it worked out well for me.
So if you have a prospect handbook, if you ever have ordered a prospect handbook, what you need to do is go to the backfields. That's where it's at. And then the next stop for all of us, NHSI high school tournament this week, but then opening days and for the minor leagues is what?
April 6th. Major leagues is April 2nd.
So a week and a half, basically.
Yeah, next Thursday for minor leagues and Sunday for major leagues.
That's pretty cute. So we'll have some games here in rainy but warm North Cackalack that you could follow us all about, and we'll be writing all about it and talking all about it and probably podcasting about it. So the World Baseball Classic almost got us through to the start of the real season, and we're very excited
close
about
enough.
That. So close
it really
enough
is
right. So
I feel like it's just on the, you know, the edge now. So
it's just over the horizon. So for Kyle and JJ, I'm John. We want to thank you for tuning into the Baseball America podcast. Our podcasts and Facebook Lives are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you are a baseball fan, you need to check out Baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Visit Baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. For those guys, I'm this guy. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.